Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D Monocle 24's weekly dedicated design show. I'm Henry Reese Sheridan, standing in this week for Josh Fennett, who's still away on a thinly veiled joyride around Singapore. On today's show, we bring you a series of reports from nations around the world working hard to establish themselves as the design hubs of tomorrow. First up,
in a moment of time when you can redesign your genetic code or outer space or the weather, who cares about the design of your coffee pot?
We head to Turkey to bring you an interview with the curators of the third Istanbul Design Biennial and get the insights of Arc Daily editor-at-large James Taylor Foster. Next, we turn our attention to the United Arab Emirates. David Michon reports from the second annual Dubai Design Week. And finally,
there's a huge amount of young, talented designers in Slovenia, and their style, very geometric, very understated, kind of a playful take on Scandinavian.
We get the lowdown on the design scene in Slovenia. We speak to Jasmina Furcek from the Slovenian design collective Uloop, and Monocle's Jamie Waters reports back from a recent trip to Ljubljana. All that coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. More and more nations are recognising the advantages of building up a strong design scene, from boosting their economy to being able to project their soft power more effectively. Today we take a look at three nations stepping up to the plate and asserting themselves as global design players for the 21st century. Let's begin with Turkey. It's currently hosting the third Istanbul Design Biennial. The show is curated by two architecture academics based in the US. Beatriz Colomina is from Princeton and Mark Wigley is based in Colombia. The conceptually ambitious theme of the show is Are We Human? Monocle's Istanbul Bureau Chief Chris Lord met up with Beatriz and Mark at the Biennial. They spoke about design show fatigue, the ideas behind the Biennial, and why Istanbul was the right place to ask the question, are we human?
So I just wanted to start by talking to you a little bit about that great opener when we first walk into the old Greek school in Galata. And there's all these logos, Design Week Singapore, Design Week Tokyo, Beijing. It's as if we're kind of drowning in these design weeks. And I just wondered, the show in itself, is it a commentary about design weeks and this sort of ubiquitous design weeks that we see all over the world these days?
Definitely, it's a commentary on this, and it's kind of a departure from this. We very deliberately kept all the logos away from what we consider the beginning of the exhibition. So all the logos are in the lobby. We are very, of course, grateful to all the supporters of the Biennale, without whom the Biennale will not be possible. But we wanted very much to insist on the idea that the Biennale is not, as should never be, a trade show. And particularly with design, this is very, very important. Our Biennales don't have that problem, but unfortunately, design Biennales have tended to be trade shows, presented the latest development in design in the last 2 years. We think that's a bankrupt idea that is not productive anymore. We wanted to expand the concept of design and separate it from this world of the industry and the 200 years narrow definition of design that was formulated around the Industrial Revolution in England. We are not living in that time anymore. We are living in a post-industrial world. The preoccupations and the problems of that world that gave rise to the definition of the world design are over. We are living in a different time and we need another understanding of what design is.
Mark, do you think it's about, in many ways, reclaiming the word design from commerce, from the idea of sort of an exchange of goods, the creation of beautiful chairs and beautiful tables?
Yeah, exactly. In a moment of time when you can redesign your genetic code or outer space or the weather, who cares about the design of your coffee pot? And does it really make you a better person if an Italian designed it? But you're right, that first thing that you experience entering the show is super critical, because, of course, if it's a design biennale and you're walking in, are you like walking into the world of design or walking out of it? The purpose of that sign is to try to say, actually, the entire world is filled with design. When you wake up in the morning, probably within the first 10 minutes, you've experienced the work of a thousand designers. Actually, design is like coming towards you all the time. You have to sort of fend it off with some sort of anti-design spray. Because I was thinking, when you said there are design biennales, design weeks, design fairs, design festivals, neighborhoods, capitals, stores, magazines, books, websites, blogs, awards, programs, schools, centers, departments, museums, exhibitions. And it's all about design, right?
It's just too much design.
Politicians think they need to be design thinkers. The weather is being designed. It's all design. So basically, how do you do a design biennale when not only has the world been designed, but design itself as a word is everywhere?
We'll come back to this idea of maybe peeling away some of this design layers. But I want to just talk about the core question of this show, essentially, which is, you know, are we human? And one of the things that's striking, you know, when you walk through that show, whether it's plastic surgery or prosthetics, this fine line between sort of ornamentation, adding something, what becomes essential, what becomes something that can improve our lives, or what simply dresses it up. You know, who would have known that Gangnam would have had the highest concentration of plastic surgeries in the world? You know, I mean, extraordinary figures like that. In the process of making this show, did you find that these lines that we're drawing here between, as I say there, you know, on one side you've got ornamentation, on one side you've got this sort of, you know, things that can improve people's lives on a very fundamental level. Is design something to be feared these days in that way?
Feared?
Fear. Well, design is what we have always been doing. Ornamentation is also very functional. It's not that only tools that serve a purpose are functional. Ornamentation also serves a purpose of seduction. Seduction is a very important part of evolution. A lot of what we do as human has to do with ornament. In fact, the very first tools that for a long time were thought to be functional were not very functional at all, but they were very symmetrical and they were done in a very beautiful way. So it was a way of showing off, or showing to other members of the species how smart I am or how artistic I am, and in that way perhaps end up with a better mate. We continue to do this by all means, whether it's makeup or whether it's plastic surgery or whether it's adding to our bodies prosthetic devices. Our species continues to redesign itself.
Finally, I just want to ask you about this very noisy city where we are today. Why was Istanbul the right place to ask the question, are we human? What made it the right biennale for this city?
Well, Istanbul is an amazing place, as you know, a place that you excavate a few meters and you encounter another civilization. There are so many civilizations on top of each other here that it's hard to take yourself too seriously. For us, in the face of this city, which is actually, in terms of design, incredibly alive as well, we are more impressed by its longer history. So it was a great inspiration for us to work in this place, a place that, of course, is not easy in this particular moment, but nothing is. We are living terrifying times in many, many parts of the world, and that, of course, includes the UK, the United States, and great parts of Europe, so what we consider the first world. It is precisely in the face of such difficult conditions as the one of today that we think the question, are we human, is urgent, and that Istanbul is a particularly good place to ask this question. Turkey is in a state of emergency, but I think we think the planet is in a state of emergency. Humanity is in a state of emergency.
That was Chris Lord talking to the curators of Istanbul's third design biennial. So that's the insider's perspective, but what about the view from without? To find out more, I turned to one of the most informed outsiders of them all. I'm talking, of course, of ARC Daily editor-at-large and Section D regular James Taylor Foster. Here's what he had to say.
I think that the very intelligent thing about the Istanbul Design Biennale is that it's embracing activities and modes of communication like social media in a way which no other Biennale or Triennale we've seen this year has. It's the most urgent of all the communication tools. It's the most rapid, the most quick. And by talking about it, you know, they talk about how design has gone viral here, you know, and it's kind of true. The idea of curating is almost a kind of viral trend now. And when you're actually discussing it in those terms, you've got to trace it as a sort of geological force, which is what they do in Istanbul. And if it is a geological force, then it's actually become a symptom of the world. Design has become a symptom of the world rather than a way to think about it. And I think that's also the case for many architecture biennales. Are they actually merely symptoms as opposed to ways of talking about things? Quite possibly. And I think that's dangerous territory. From my point of view, what we see in the Istanbul Design Biennale is an extremely tight series of exhibitions, bringing together a phenomenally wide, intelligent, considered range of exhibitors. And that's something which I don't think we've seen so far this year necessarily in kind of such a holistic way. If we talk about the kind of sequence of biennales and triennales, architecture and design that we've seen this year, this one is doing something extremely important that lasts well beyond the kind of month of its existence. And that, of course, is the great challenge for all of these kind of architecture biennales and triennales. How can they extend far beyond the time frame that they're allocated? At the time in which this biennale was really being conceived was when a lot of the political instability started to occur. However, it doesn't have that feeling. The kind of interesting perspective that the curators have on this issue is that, you know, Istanbul as a city could almost be seen as the design capital of the world. You know, the Middle East, Mark Wrigley argues, is the very kind of incubator in which humanity designed the species that we know of in the earliest days of our existence. It's the best place to have it. And irrespective of the fact that it's in a state of emergency, this is actually the best time to talk about design, because the species, they argue, are also in a state of emergency in many respects. Design, they argue, shouldn't necessarily be kind of just a thing to be spoken about in peaceful times or times when we're all affluent. Design has a kind of urgency that relates to the context of the world around. And Istanbul feels tense in many respects. That would probably be how I would describe it. But it's actually made the Istanbul Design Biennale, Are We Human, more relevant.
That was James Taylor Foster's thoughts on the third Istanbul Design Biennial, Are We Human? It runs until November the 20th, and all the details can be found at arewehuman.iksv.org. Istanbul is a city that has been at the crux of human civilizations for centuries, gradually developing layer upon historical layer. Our next design nation, the United Arab Emirates, has had a very different trajectory. Oil revenue led to an explosion of development in the second half of the 20th century that left the country unrecognisable from its earlier form. No city exemplifies this hyperdevelopment more starkly than Dubai. The discovery of oil in the 1960s led to the city's transformation into a global metropolis. Today, it's moved beyond oil, and its main sources of revenue come from tourism, aviation, real estate, and financial services. And it continues to take measures to further diversify its economy. One of the most recent developments to this end is Dubai Design District, also known as D3. The district recently hosted the second annual Dubai Design Week. Monocle contributor David Michon was at the fair and brings us this report.
In a region that is rife with conflict and instability, Dubai and the UAE have become a favorite home to business, establishing within this desert metropolis several free trade zones directed at finance, media, healthcare, and many others. One of its newest and perhaps its most ambitious is the Dubai Design District. Established in 2013, the district today is a collection of several low-rise buildings that mix office space, shops, studios, and cafes. But it's also a construction site. There is much more to come, including a new waterfront public space and a massive new educational institute that should soon break ground. Established in 2013, this year marks only the second it hosts Dubai Design Week, a rapidly expanding design week centered on the district and extending across the city. Often criticized from outside Dubai as a project attempting to buy in the creative cachet of the architectural design and fashion industries, local designers see another purpose for these 6 days of events and exhibitions. For them, it's about discovering what Emirati design is. Rand Abdul Jabbar is an Iraq-born architect and furniture designer that lives and works in Dubai.
This is the experimental ground, experimental landscape, and there's a lot of support for young people, a lot of opportunity. What's interesting is that you'll kind of find a theme that we're all looking towards, not in a nostalgic way, but looking towards our history and heritage and environment and some of the materials present here as a means of kind of making sense of it all. And that's very evident in the work. And it's a very, you know, young scene, only been maybe 3 to 5 years. So there's a lot of potential, and time will tell how it develops.
I'm Tarek Zaharna, founder and director of TZ Architects, which is a young up-and-coming architectural practice that focuses on really trying to find the architectural and design language of the region and sort of taking it through its paces and contemporizing it to the point where it just can become accessible and it can be identified as regional architecture. Because I feel that that's something that has been missing, and I feel that architectural development of the region has just abruptly halted a few decades back. I feel like the craftsmanship or the idea of making and really paying attention to detail has something that's just been looked at as something that's quite dated, mainly because the idea of importing design and importing certain ways of doing things has become the trend. Yeah, I mean, partly due to the fact that the region has always looked to either Asia or the West, Europe and the US, as areas or as places that really have excelled in design. And to an extent, they have, massively so. But I just feel that that has resulted in people really not paying attention or really not giving design the attention that it deserves in the region.
Both Rand and Tarek have installations and objects on display at the Design District, known as D3, which explore materiality and lifestyle in the city. Both projects use wood, Rand creating chairs and a table using a method typical of traditional Dao boat construction, and Tarek using imported American hardwood to develop a kind of gazebo that pushes a style and material which stand in contrast to the steel and glass New Dubai has become known for, and of which D3 itself is constructed. Tarek has lived in Dubai for 8 years, moving here from London.
Certain areas or just the sort of the domestic scale or the sort of the more intricate details in architecture, in spatial configuration, spatial planning, they've all been overlooked. Every city that one would go to, I would feel that it has a sort of a character that stands out. I couldn't pinpoint the character here or the sort of the charisma or the charm that other cities have. And in a way, because I didn't expect that feeling or I didn't expect to not have that feeling, I was interested to come back and explore. And what I found is that things are just designed not to human scale. So everything is just sort of, it looks great on plan, looks great in elevation, but then when you want to sort of get in between all the cluster of buildings, there's like nothing there. Hence, you know, looking back at sort of traditional or vernacular regional architecture, it was all about engaging the street. It was all about being social with your neighbors and people around you. Whether it's sort of the tribal Bedouin culture or the sort of more Levant, Middle Eastern, Mediterranean, this sort of social status and just being sort of engaging with your environment is absolutely paramount, and that has been lost.
One organization that is working to support designers with this mindset in Dubai is Tashkil, a 9-year-old art and design fab lab and studio space started by Latifa Bint Maktoum. One of its programs, Tanween, pairs UAE designers with local manufacturers and is how Rand produced her tables and chairs. Jill Hoyle is Tashkil's manager.
There is a huge retail market here for established labels and manufacturers, but I think there is a recognition that is developing for the small designer who might be hand-making products or having them handmade for them and working very closely with the manufacturing process rather than factory-produced things. But it's starting and it's just beginning to grow, and people are beginning to recognize the beauty of something which is unique as opposed to something which might be valued because of the label that's attached to it.
This was the first year Tashkil has exhibited at Dubai Design Week. Director Latifa Bint Maktoum on the value of the week and of D3.
D3, especially this area, is now housing a lot of design studios, and a lot of the designers actually who have offices now in the buildings have started in Tashkil with us in the beginning. I always say you can close your eyes and point anywhere and you'll walk in the direction of someone who has worked with us before. So for me, I'm proud of all of them.
How have you seen the design community grow, maybe in terms of confidence or in terms of size?
I think the confidence has grown because there's also government support and community support, especially now by building D3 and by focusing specifically on design and designers around. It's like telling someone you can do it and go with what you can do. 10 years ago, that was quite difficult for designers here because especially with art and design, people would question, why are you going into this and how can you make money out of this? Because Dubai is a business base, so I think once they understand how you can make this as a career, then you're fine.
That was David Michon reporting from Dubai Design Week. The December-January edition of Monocle magazine features a report from Jamie Waters from the Slovenian capital, Ljubljana. Jamie joined me in the studio to talk about what he found out there. But first, here's a chat I had with Jasmina Facek, a textile designer who's part of a Slovenian design collective called Ulup. She told me a bit about the group's work and what it's like to be a designer in Slovenia.
We established our group like in 2004, so we are together now for 14 years. At the beginning, we were mostly working on textile design products, like making our product and selling it in Slovenia and abroad. And in this period, we made this very famous woolen soap, which won some prizes, and we sell it in Bilbao, in Guggenheim Museum, and in Sweden, and it's still sold, for example, in Amsterdam, in Drog Design Store. So we were mostly focused on the product. But also we start to do installations, like space installation in textile. Also in this time, since 2011, we start to be most focused on social design. So our very important project, which we start also in 2011, is called Revealed Hands. And we make it for women, immigrant women coming from ex-Yugoslavia countries. And they live in Slovenia, mostly in the northern part of Slovenia. So we do a project in little village or little town, I must say, and include them. Like we have group of 20 women and we start to work on textile design with them.
But I wonder if now you could tell me a little bit about what it's like to be a designer in Slovenia and also what the most important Slovenian institutions and exhibitions are for you as a designer.
I can say how is it to be a textile designer, where a textile industry doesn't exist for 10 or 15 years anymore. It's impossible to be a textile designer, for example, and to live out of this. So you have to be very creative in finding other solutions and another ideas how to apply actually your knowledge and how to apply your work into the Slovenian design scene. So the main institution for design is still Museum for Architecture and Design. It's MAO, and people there give really good work and offer designer free spaces for exhibitions, and we collaborate with them very good.
And Jamie joins me in the studio now. Jamie, you just come back from one of your design excursions to Ljubljana in Slovenia. Why did you go and what did you find there?
So I went for the Christmas shopping trip, which is this thing, we do it every year and we kind of go to a different city that's sort of a bit under the radar, but is interesting for some reason. Ljubljana is one of those places that, I mean, it's increasingly becoming a tourist attraction. And there's a really interesting kind of retail scene there. Also, there's architecture. It's a medieval city. There's kind of all these sort of things going on. But increasingly, there's an interesting mix of shops. And among that, I thought the design shops were perhaps the strongest.
Now, I know that the city has, within design, a particularly proud tradition of graphic design. Is that right?
Yeah, and one of my absolute favourite shops that I found there was this letterpress studio. It's called Tipa Renesansa, and it's sort of set on the banks of the Ljubljanica River. It's run by this sort of diehard graphic design and font fanatic called Marko Drapic. I hope I'm saying his name correctly there. Almost certainly not. But what he's done is really amazing because he sort of has spent the last 10, 15 years scouring old studios, printing studios around Slovenia and sort of taking hardware from all of these places. And he's collected it in this little studio. So it's almost like a museum. And in fact, he said to me that he quite probably has more historic printing equipment than the Technical Museum of Slovenia. So you've got these like proof printing presses, you've got these like paper cutting machines, some are from the 1850s, some are from the 1950s. So it's this really amazing setup. And what he does is he uses all of these to create everything from wedding invitations to he does like dedications in the front of notebooks and things like that. But he said the amazing thing about these machines is that because they're so old, they're of course much slower than modern machines, but you can control every step of the process. he uses them really cleverly, and he'll create mistakes in the font. So if he does a dedication, he'll make certain letters a bit bigger. There's almost like an ink stain or something, and it adds to this kind of charming, very personal effect. So he was amazing, and he's tapping into this rich history of graphic design in Slovenia. And a big part of that stems from the fact that its two major newspapers have bespoke fonts. He said that that's kind of has always kind of stemmed the interest in design. So it's always been there. The graphic design has always been sort of prevalent. Even today, there's like this host of young designers. And so the graphic design, that's the sort of hub for it. And yeah, that's one aspect of their design scene.
And you also dipped your toe into the product design pool over there, didn't you?
Yes, so I was pleasantly surprised by the abundance of good design shops. They're also tapping into a rich history of design in Slovenia. Niko Krauj is kind of their famous furniture designer. He designed the Rex chair in the 50s and 60s, and it's become this kind of celebrated design. And I think he kind of kicked off this industry. ID Doma is this amazing furniture shop, which is set in this like brutalist building. It's run by architects who have an architecture studio within there. So it kind of brings together all these design elements once again. They have like Rex chairs and a lot of Slovenian designers, a lot of lighting. And then they also have products from the big international designers, so Boltorb and Molteni and all that sort of thing. And then right to the smaller scale, you know, there's a shop called Good, and it's got kind of little ceramics and wooden jewelry and all these things from young Slovenian designers. And the owners of that shop, who are very young themselves, were interesting because they were saying there's a huge amount of young, talented designers in Slovenia. And their style, it's always hard to categorise a national style, but he said very geometric, very understated, kind of a playful take on Scandinavian, if you can say that. But he said it's just so difficult to get your name out and to become stocked in shops and things like that. So this shop, Good, is championing these young designers. And for some of them, they're sort of commissioning them to create work that they're showing in the shop for the first time. So very strong on the product design front. And the other shop that I'll mention, if you kind of want to see the best in Slovenian designers, is the shop at the Museum of Architecture and Design, which is set in this old castle. It's kind of in the suburbs of Slovenia. So it's the one place, you know, most of the shops are around the city centre, which is very walkable. But if you take a quick trip in the car, there's this amazing castle called Fužine Castle. There's a cloistered courtyard, and just overlooking that courtyard, you find this design shop. So it's attached to a museum. We tend to think of museum shops as being very bland. You kind of bypass them because you're going to be overwhelmed with souvenirs. But actually, they've kind of curated this really amazing selection of promising Slovenian designers. And Olup is one particular name to watch. Nina Ur. There's just like a lot of really interesting, really classy design.
Jamie Waters there, and you can read his full report from Ljubljana in the December-January issue of Monocle magazine, which hits shelves on December 17th. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Alex Funnell. If you have any comments or queries, please feel free to write to me. I'm at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. You can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud and iTunes. And if you're on iTunes, please do leave us a review. It really helps people find the show. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. And until next time, it's goodbye from me.